Our guest today on Meet the Press is Senator Eugene J. McCarthy of Minnesota, a declared candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination. The interview with General Maxwell D. Taylor, originally announced for today, has been postponed. We'll have the first questions now from Charles Murphy of NBC News.
Senator, you've said the administration was afraid to negotiate the Vietnam War, and yet Secretary of Defense designate Clark Clifford, in explaining the president's remarks at San Antonio, has said that all the administration expects from the other side during a bombing cessation is that it not exceed the normal levels of infiltration of men and supplies into the South. Senator, do you think that's an unreasonable or fearful attitude?
I don't think the procedure by which you get there is the important consideration. I see no evidence that the administration is prepared to negotiate anything excepting some kind of terms of surrender. And what they're afraid of is to negotiate a compromise settlement, I think.
Do you think they're afraid to negotiate still?
Yes, I think they're afraid to negotiate a compromise settlement. I don't think they're afraid to negotiate a surrender, but that's an impossibility.
Well, shortly after Mr. Clifford made that statement, we began exploring Hanoi's peace initiatives, and we limited the bombing of North Vietnam. And yet the response of the other side was to initiate a number of attacks in the South and build up its offensive capability around Quezon. Do you think that might indicate the other side is afraid to negotiate, Senator?
Well, I don't think you could say that that was a response to what limited reduction of bombing took place on the part of the initiative of the United States, because we were continuing our buildup in South Vietnam at the same time. No, I think the other side is prepared to negotiate some kind of compromise or coalition government in South Vietnam, and I don't think we are.
Why do you think it launched these attacks?
Well, I don't know why it launched these attacks. I assume that it wants to make it clear that it intends to continue to fight.
Senator, you said you would scale down our offensive operations. Does that mean you would stop the bombing of infiltration routes leading from the north into South Vietnam?
Well, what I said was that I would stop the bombing because I thought it was clear they were prepared to negotiate. There's no point in stopping the bombing or preparing to negotiate unless we're willing to make some concessions by way of a coalition government in South Vietnam. I said, secondly, that if the South Vietnamese government, General Tu and General Key, would not let us negotiate, that then we would have to scale down and draw back to a point where they either assumed the burden of the war or were willing to negotiate or to approve a negotiation which would involve a compromise. We could not continue in the position in which we now seem to be, in which they reserve the right to veto any kind of negotiation effort that we might make.
But you're asking us to take the first step, aren't you?
Well, I'm asking us. I don't really care who takes the first step. I would be glad to have us take the first step. I think we should.
Thank you, gentlemen. Our other reporters on the panel are David Broder of the Washington Post, Hayes Gorey of Time Magazine, and Robert Novak of the Chicago Sun-Times. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Broder.
Senator, despite your many statements on the subject, and perhaps because of bad reporting by those of us in the press, people are still confused as to your basic purpose. Do you wish to take the nomination away from President Johnson, or is your candidacy simply a vehicle for allowing people to express disagreement with his policies on Vietnam and other issues?
I don't see it as having that limited purpose. My objective is to bring about a change of national policy, both with reference to the war and also with reference to national priorities. And as I see it, in order to accomplish that, as things are going, it would be necessary to take the nomination for the Democratic Party from President Johnson. So that is my objective.
You told Mr. Murphy that you thought the president was afraid to negotiate a compromise settlement. What is he afraid of?
Well, I don't know what he's afraid of. What did President Kennedy mean when he said we should not negotiate from fear, but not fear to negotiate? I think it has that same meaning. I think it's quite clear as to what he's afraid of is to go into a compromise arrangement in South Vietnam.
If negotiations begin, Senator...
Fear of the future, I suppose, or fear of fear.
If negotiations begin, Senator, would you be willing to drop your candidacy and defend the president against those who would think that he was perhaps selling out the interests of the country by entering into negotiations?
Well, I don't think just entering into negotiations would make much difference to me. I would like to know what they were prepared to negotiate. In the same way as I've not been very much moved by the administration saying we will negotiate any place, any time. or on a neutral ship in a neutral sea. I'd like to have them designate a place and a time. I'd even be glad to have them send the Secretary of State and have him take up a position somewhere. But what's more important to me is to determine what they are prepared to concede, what they are prepared to agree to, rather than simply to sit down and say, we will negotiate. If it's nothing more than a surrender, I think it means nothing to begin negotiations.
Mr. Gorey.
Senator McCarthy, if the results of the early primaries are so dire for your cause as some of the early polls have been predicting, would you consider withdrawing from the race?
Well, I would not consider withdrawing. I don't think the results are going to be so bad or not as dire as they've been predicted to be. The indications I have are that we'll make a good, strong showing. But in addition to that, I've committed myself in these six primaries to people who are interested in making this cause, and I'm prepared to give all that I have of reputation and of energy and possibly a limited political future throughout the course.
Are there any circumstances under which you would withdraw?
Well, I might if I were satisfied that the people who were supporting me, who were committed with me in the cause, by some kind of prudential judgment, to decide it would be best not to pursue our effort. But I don't see that as developing in any of the states in which I'm now entered.
Mr. Novak.
Senator McCarthy, barring a miracle or the absolutely unforeseen, President Johnson is going to be nominated. Will you support him if he is nominated?
Well, I don't quite put the case in the class of miracles yet, or do I admit that he might not be, that he's certain to be the Democratic candidate. If he is the nominee, as far as I can see, any of the Republicans who are in the running would not create any problem for me as to which I might choose to support.
You mean you will support President Johnson?
But I don't see myself turning to Vice President Nixon or any of the Republicans who are now being nominated.
Or Governor Rockefeller.
I reserve the right to look at the whole picture come next fall.
Well, you have said you are providing a Democratic alternative to the anti-war demonstrators. What alternative will they have if you support President Johnson and there is no third-party candidate in
it? Well, I've said that I was not going to participate in a third-party movement. I think that it is right to give the people a test, and this is what we're doing. And following that, if it does not work out, then I think you let the people choose between what I would consider two very limited choices in the November elections.
Well, following up Mr. Broder's question of what your purpose is, isn't it a fact that President Johnson has gained in strength since you have entered the race against him?
Well, I don't know as that you could relate it to my having entered the race against him. I think that what will happen along the way of the primaries and also before the election next fall will depend to a large extent upon events, possibly, if there is a significant change in events. But the other possible change is that allowing that things remain much as they are, I find that the public opinion, whereas it's still on the side of the war, and I think it's in order that it should be, because it reflects, a patriotic disposition on the part of the Americans to want to support their government as long as they can, and not to pass the kind of rather harsh judgment upon it that I'm asking them to pass. But I note that this judgment, in a quantitative way, where it's still on the side of the administration, is moving very much closer to midpoint. And you could have a significant change, I think, of public opinion on this issue, which might bring about, as it would be reported, as it would be manifest in a quantitative way, a massive change in opposition to the war in Vietnam.
Senator, may I ask you a question? You said a minute ago in answer to another question that before you changed your position as to candidates, you would want to know what the negotiations would be about. What do you think we ought to negotiate for as a minimum?
Well, I think that as a beginning, you have to recognize the National Liberation Front and all the forces in it, and I've seen no indication that the administration is prepared to do that. I think they ought to say very clearly they're prepared to negotiate without being subject to some kind of absolute veto on the part of the South Vietnamese government. Those two conditions, it seems to me, are preliminary almost to even talking about.
But those are things we're giving up. What do you think we ought to ask as a minimum, or do you think we ought to ask nothing?
Well, I think we ask something. We ask for some stability in South Vietnam. We ask for representation in the coalition government of the forces that are on our side in South Vietnam. We ask for some arrangement whereby there could be national supervision and policing of the coalition government for some time to come after a settlement was worked out.
Mr. Murphy.
Senator, wouldn't this be a most inopportune time for the administration to be talking about a coalition government?
I don't think there's any better time. I think they should have been talking about it a year and a half ago, and I think that each day that goes by, that the time at which they ought to be talking about it becomes even more pressing.
Well, the Saigon government has so far survived this offensive against it. Wouldn't this weaken it, though, to even consider a coalition government at this time?
I don't see the Saigon government as getting any stronger by delay. I think we ought to proceed now to negotiations if we can and take our chances on what happens to the Saigon government.
Mr. Broder.
Senator, excuse me, why do you think none of the Senate Democrats who agree with you on the substance of your position has come forward to support you?
Well, I don't really want to speculate. Most of them have explained. I could run down the list. They've all given essentially the same explanation. Some of them running for re-election said they thought it might hurt their prospects of being re-elected. Others have said that they didn't think it would help my cause and that therefore they were withholding any kind of public or formal commitment. I just soon let them explain.
But if these men who have access to the same kind of information and quality of information that you do about what is happening in the war do not regard this as the kind of overriding crisis that you seem to view it as, does that not undercut the whole logic of your position?
Well, I don't think it affects the logic of my position at all, and I don't think it's reflected that they don't think this is an overriding issue. Most of them have based their defense upon grounds of political judgment or of expediency rather than on the substance of the issue, namely that they don't think it has a chance of succeeding and that they feel it's better to stand aside. I don't think you make a decision of this kind in terms of how it's likely to satisfy the political plans of your colleagues in the Senate. I said earlier, I thought this case had to be taken to the jury of the people and that the best way to do it was through the primaries. And as you may recall, when I entered, I said I thought other senators ought to run as favorite sons or that other senators might run even in primaries. I thought they should. I would like to see it more broadly based. But having said that, when the choice was put to me as to whether I would do it or not, I said that I would.
If after you've taken this case to the jury of the primaries, as you put it, the result is a substantial victory for President Johnson or whoever represents him in the particular state, would you be willing to conclude then that the United States ought to go on the present course in Vietnam?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think you'd continue to make the case to the public if you think that what's going on in Vietnam is wrong. And I'm sure this would be the approach of the other senators, even though they're not actively supporting my candidacy.
Mr. Gorey.
Senator, you said last week that there had been a request for tactical nuclear arms in Vietnam. The White House denied it. Who made such a request?
Well, I didn't say that there had been a request. I was asked whether there were rumors with reference to tactical nuclear weapons. And in Boston, I said there were rumors and suggestion of recommendations and possibly of requests. And I said I hoped that the administration would not respond to those requests or recommendations if they were presented to them. But well, it was a statement in that general context. I didn't name anyone, and it was a question about rumors around Washington. If you're asked about rumors around Washington, you know you must respond affirmatively because those rumors are here.
Well, now, the White House calls your comment unfair to the soldiers. Do you take issue with that?
Well, I think that I don't see how it could be unfair to the soldiers. This has become their rather standard response now, to say that what you're doing is weakening the cause or else it's being unfair to the soldiers. And I don't like to use the word disservice. I think that that was used by the White House press man, too. But I think this is this question of the use of tactical weapons, even the prospect of it, is one that ought to be discussed. And if someone says, are there rumors about, we know there are rumors about, and it ought to be in the form of public discussion. I think that what Mr. Christian said, first of all, he misstated my remarks. It seems to me a White House press man ought to go beyond a press service wire in finding out what the facts are. If I had a press secretary in my office who made a statement of that kind on the basis of a wire service release without checking it out about another colleague in the Senate, I think I'd fire him.
Mr. Novak.
Senator McCarthy, returning to the lack of support of you by your colleagues, did you expect when you got into this that there would be at least some support among the Democratic senators for your candidacy?
You mean in terms of endorsements?
Yes.
I didn't think I had any assurance from anyone that there would be an endorsement, but I had encouragement.
Do you think they've double-crossed you then?
No,
encouraging you?
No one has double-crossed me. I said that they've continued, really, to speak on the issue. People like Senator Morse and Senator Greening, Senator Church, Senator Fulbright.
Did Senator Kennedy encourage you?
No, he didn't encourage me.
Did you expect him to endorse you?
No, I didn't expect him to endorse me. I think what he's done is essentially the same as the other senators have done, and I find no fault with him for that.
Did you ever ask him for his endorsement?
No, I didn't.
Why is that?
Well, I haven't asked anyone for an endorsement. I think these are all mature politicians. They know what the issues are. They make judgment as to their own responsibility and to their own particular political situation, and I haven't really gone around seeking endorsements.
Well, wouldn't the endorsement from Senator Kennedy have been very beneficial to your campaign?
I think it would have been helpful, yes. And it would be helpful.
But you've never asked for it.
I haven't asked for it, but I don't know why I should ask for it. He knows where I am, and I know where he is, and he knows what the issue is all about.
Senator, on the matter of endorsement, in a broadcast about a month or so ago, you said, and I quote you, "The question of who endorses you and who doesn't is relatively unimportant." How important do you think the endorsement of the ADA is?
Well, I was glad to have the endorsement of the ADA, particularly after the contest that they had at the convention. I think if it had come without a contest, it would have been less valuable to me than it was after the challenge was laid down. Since, first of all, the endorsement is good to have, and secondly, I think the issues which were raised in the debate are important to have introduced into the campaign.
Well, are you saying that if you get an endorsement, that's good, but when you don't get an endorsement, it doesn't make any difference?
Well, there are two different kinds of endorsements. I haven't really said that the endorsement, for example, of Senator Kennedy would not be helpful to me.
Mr. Murphy.
Senator, you say there are rumors that nuclear weapons may have been requested. Do you have any information that they have been?
Well, if I had, I wouldn't give it on this program.
Well, is this a supposition on your
part? All I was asked about was the rumors, and I'm not prepared to go beyond that, excepting to say, as most everyone in Washington knows, that there have been suggestions around the edges that nuclear weapons, tactical weapons, have been recommended, have been considered. I'm sure they've been in some way, if they haven't been considered by the Pentagon in some kind of program planning, I would be very much surprised.
Mr. Broder.
Senator, I'm puzzled as to your willingness to pass on rumors about a critical question at the same time that you seem to think the President's press secretary is very much at fault for not checking beyond a wire service report on what you say.
Well, now, I didn't pass on rumors. I said that he asked me about rumors. I said there were rumors abroad. I wasn't passing on rumors. I was confirming a fact which he asked me about and a fact which everyone
have
here...
you made any effort, Senator, to verify these rumors or
yes,
disprove
the Foreign
them?
Relations Committee is trying to verify the rumors now, as you know.
And can you tell us anything
no,
about
I can't
what the
tell
information?
You about it. I can't tell you about it. But the question was about rumors. It wasn't a question of my passing on rumors. I didn't get up and say there are rumors in Washington. I was asked whether the rumors that were abroad were rumors in Washington as well as in Boston.
Can you say, Senator, whether the information so far developed tends to increase your apprehension on this subject or set it at rest?
I think the statement the administration has made about it's not intending to use such weapons, that this tends to relieve me somewhat.
Mr. Gorey.
Senator, you've been insisting that you're not a one-issue candidate. Could you tell us just how your domestic program, then, would differ from that of Lyndon Johnson?
Yes, I think I could. I think there are two or three issues. I think one is the question of credibility, which is a most serious concern in the country. But probably the most important political issue relates to the lack of confidence on the part of the people in, as well as the Congress in what the administration represents as the situation in Vietnam. As far as the domestic program is concerned, I think that it's rather clear that the administration's statement that we could conduct two wars, what they call the war in Vietnam and the war on poverty, at the same time and win them both, that this kind of promise is not being fulfilled. We're conducting the war in Vietnam, we're not winning that, and we're not even carrying on the war against poverty in this country. That nearly every one of the critical programs, in fact every one of them, that bear upon what I think is a problem which should have top priority in this country, the problems of the city, the problems of poverty, these are all being understaffed and underfinanced. Housing and re-education and the upgrading of jobs and of employment, the whole complex of programs are being underfinanced and falling behind.
Gentlemen, well, we have less than 4 minutes.
Excuse me, could it be different without an end of the war?
Well, it could be better even without the end of the war. I think if we had better leadership and had put more emphasis upon these programs in terms of priority, we could be doing better than we are doing. But certainly the war is the great distraction. It draws off resources, it draws off manpower, and it drains off our moral energy. And I think it's using up practically the whole potential of the administration for leadership.
Mr. Novak.
Senator McCarthy, you referred a few moments ago to your limited political future, perhaps. Do you think that your friends and colleagues in the Democratic Farmer Labor Party back in Minnesota are preparing a purge for you in 1970?
Well, I don't know. I suppose there are a few, but they were preparing a purge for me even before I got onto this issue. There are always people in a party who are preparing a purge for you of some kind. I'm not particularly distressed at the prospect. I don't think it would succeed. The most recent Minnesota polls show that nearly 70% of the people in my state approve of what I'm doing.
Senator,
doesn't mean they approve of my stand on the issue, absolutely, but they're prepared to say that it's a good thing to raise the issue as I am.
Senator, depending, of course, on the 1968 election, is it possible that your former colleague and the present vice president, Mr. Humphrey, might be your opponent in the primary in 1970?
Well, I suppose that's possible, but I don't see it as being very likely.
Have you been threatened with that by anybody in the DFL?
No, I haven't been threatened by that. I think there's been one columnist who speculated on it, but that one columnist, just like one swallow doesn't make a spring. It comes pretty close. Once one does it, they're all likely to do it in the course of 2 or 3 months, but as of now, not many have taken it up.
Senator, I'd like to come back for a minute to nuclear weapons. If you were president, under what circumstances, if any, would you use nuclear weapons?
Well, I think that the understanding we have in the country, which is sound, is that we would use nuclear weapons in the ultimate defense of the United States, but not to use them as an offensive weapon in some kind of limited and questionable commitment of the United States, and certainly not to use them as offensive weapons in a war like that in Vietnam.
Mr. Murphy.
Senator, I'd like to come back to the vice presidency. Let's say your roles were reversed. Suppose you were chosen vice president. What would you be doing? Would you be defending the president's war policy as Mr. Humphrey is?
Well, that's a rather speculative question. I don't think I would be. I've said this before. I think the role of the vice president really depends upon the individual's conception of it. At least, I think, when one disagrees with the president on a policy of this kind, you can be quiet as a vice president. I don't think there's any way in which a vice president can be compelled to support publicly a position taken by a president with which he disagrees. And I anticipate that if I were the vice president now, I think I'd be quiet.
Do you think a vice president under Mr. Johnson would be chosen again? One who was quiet?
I think he'll have a vice president if he runs again.
One who was quiet, I mean.
Well, I don't know whether that was taken into account in Atlantic City or not. It would be rather difficult, I think, he would certainly be urging his vice president to support him.
What do you think Mr. Humphrey would be doing if he were in the Senate now?
Well, I don't want to speculate on that. I say this, I've never found that the vice president taking any position in private with reference to the war is any different from that which he takes publicly.
Very short.
I have to assume that he accepts this position.
Very short, Mr. Broder.
Senator, you talked about underfinanced domestic programs. Are you willing to support a tax increase to help pay for those programs?
Well, I would be willing to support a tax increase if the domestic programs were expanded. With the present budget and the anticipated conditions in the economy, however, I don't think we need a tax increase.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Senator McCarthy, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest after this message.
A printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamp, self-addressed envelope, to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guest will be Major General Moshe Dayan, Minister of Defense of Israel, who will be in this country on a visit. Now this is Lawrence Spivak saying goodbye for Senator Eugene McCarthy and Meet the Press.
In a message calling on all citizens to cooperate with the Heart Association, Vice President Hubert H. Humphrey stated, "No one is immune to the possibility of a heart attack or stroke or other diseases of the heart or blood vessels. They can strike any age, man or woman, rich or poor. Over 1 million deaths result each year in the United States from these diseases. That's more deaths than from all other causes combined. We must intensify research, education, and community service programs as carried forward by your Heart Association and your government. The Vice President's message included a reminder that February has been proclaimed American Heart Month by President Johnson. And he ended with this urgent request. Let's work to achieve victory over our nation's number one killer. You can help your own heart and the hearts of those you love by helping the Heart Fund. Give generously. Give so more will live. Later tonight, Second Sunday, Suffrage Is Not Enough, The New Woman, a 55-minute news special with Bill Ryan. The focus is on today's American woman. No longer content to tend the hearth and rock the cradle, she wants to be active in world affairs and is making herself heard and felt in such diverse fields as civil rights, anti-war demonstrations, and big business. Today's woman no longer believes the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. She resents her second citizen status, and she's doing something about it. In ever-increasing numbers, women are invading the traditional male domain of industry, politics, and the professions, proving again the age-old epithet, never underestimate the power of a woman. Among those interviewed are Betty Friedan, originator of the feminine mystique, and Mrs. John Bennett, wife of the president of Union Theological Seminary. Join Bill Ryan for Second Sunday, Suffrage Is Not Enough, The New Woman, tonight on the NBC Radio Network. Join us each Sunday for News in the Making as the nation's top reporters put challenging questions to world leaders on Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air. Another Winter Olympics report coming up on Monitor and NBC Radio.